Okay, we've got a large pile of questions, written questions to get through, and then we'll have the roving mic.
Yeah, so we believe that what you get out of today is more out of the questions than that you asked. So we've got one here about Veterans Affairs. So if someone has a return serviceman, they can get, you know, grants through Veterans Affairs. So it's slightly more than what the WINS funeral grant is.
And at the same time, yeah, there's things, you know, when people have died of an accident or if there's a homicide, then ACC as well will be, you know, the $7,000 to $10,000 in assistance. There's different assistance available.
We've just got a few different questions about natural eco funerals and things, plots. In the Manawatu, there's no eco cemetery, no burial sites. The council years ago sort of tried, they had about four or five sites that they were looking at. One was at the back of the current cemetery. I think one was down Tūtaki Road, another one out the back of Ashley sort of cemetery out the back there somewhere, and a few other sites, and you know they haven't progressed any further with that. If anyone wants an eco burial, our closest one is Whanganui that we go to, so Aramaho Cemetery over in Whanganui. There's also Ōtaki Cemetery, and we've also done some out at Makra down in Wellington. And mainly the cost for a eco burial, the cemetery fees are probably a little bit more higher than the standard burial cost.
Yeah, so we were just discussing with a lovely gentleman over a cup of tea. I don't know who he is. No. We were talking about, he wanted me to share an anecdote, a little tale about a natural burial funeral service. And I'm not on the funeral directing side, but I do assist from time to time. And this one in particular, I supported the funeral director. We went to Aramaho Cemetery at Whanganui. We have cardboard caskets that are available. So this cardboard casket was what the loved one was placed in, and it was attended by several of her work colleagues. It was quite small, and I just remember it being a beautiful place with bird life. It was really special and intimate. And when we went there, so you know, once she was buried, you know, they do wait for some time, and a tree or a little, you know, a plant is planted. Will be, you know, it would have been planted on her grave afterwards, so instead of a headstone. But you know, there are still ways that if people are conscious about wanting to be eco-friendly, you know, you don't have to be embalmed. We do have options such as cardboard caskets. We've got woolen caskets. There are wicker caskets that people can be buried in. Even if it's in Palmerston North, there are ways if that's something, but like Hayden said, to be an official eco burial site, that comes down to the council. You know, we can certainly push feedback forward to the council, but we can only do what we.
You get more leeway with public, you know, putting their proposals in and that to try and force for them to make a decision about an eco burial site. So I think it's always been there in the background, but they just haven't moved forward with any clarity about eco site here in the Manawatu.
Yeah, and as Hayden said, it's the soil quality. I think with us being on clay, there's just not the same, you know, in terms of that decomposition.
So it's trying to find a site that, I suppose, the neighbours aren't going to be, you know, where a cemetery will pop up, all those sort of circumstances. And so with an eco burial, as Kylie said, the thing, you don't have to have a ceremony or anything, just have something at the time of the sort of little gathering just at the graveside, you know, when the time comes. So they're participating in doing something when it comes to that ritual of the entering into the grave. Now, we've just got a question here about our funeral trust plan. It's where you can, you know, put up to 10,000, which is free from government testing, and that does accumulate interest over the years. So it's not a high interest rate, but you're getting more than what you put in.
And on that note as well, when you have got a funeral trust plan, because it is interest bearing, there is for the the tax.
Withholding tax.
Yeah, so a lot of times people might get their IRD statements towards the end of the tax year, and then they say, "Hang on, I wasn't, but because things are done properly through our accountant, and it's all linked up with IRD. That is a thing. Yeah.
And there's a question about if you can be buried anywhere, outside of a cemetery. The only way you can be buried on a property or somewhere that's not a cemetery, it's you've got to be over the K's from a cemetery. I'm not quite sure if it's 25 or 50 K's or something like that. If you're outside those limits, you can have a burial plot on your farm or something like that. But if you're within a certain range of a cemetery, you're not allowed to do it. So it's all done by distance.
Okay, so we've got someone here that's interested in an eco burial again. Is the burial place different than at Calvin Grove? So yes, as I touched on, there is specific eco burial sites at Arimaho Cemetery as well as Oteke, and all around, various places in the country. Yes, the tree gets planted on the grave site. Yes, at an eco, site. Yes, are coffins different? Yes, so obviously with a wooden casket, it might be treated or it might be varnished. So those are things that are not permitted on an eco burial site. But that's where I say we do have cardboard caskets. I work with a lovely lady named Bex who developed outside of the box caskets. And it's kind of funny because I think these caskets would be, what would they be, Hayden? 2,500, 3,000, I think,
yeah,
still.
Yeah,
they're
not cheap. So.
They're still not cheap, but environmentally, she takes the remnants that would otherwise go to waste from the forest floor after milling's been done, and she turns that wood into cardboard, which is used. Yeah, turns the wood into cardboard for these caskets, and they are designed to spec so that they can hold weight. There's a lot of ingenuity that goes into them. Yeah.
But you did offer me hire the casket and put a cardboard one inside when it's going to cremation.
That's for a cremation. We've got what we call a liner. So yeah, a service, you can have we use a remove veneer flat lid polished casket, but inside what we call a liner. So out at the cemetery, at the crematorium, we lift it in and out. It's all covered, enclosed and things, and then just bring it out the back. So it's the cheapest casket that we sort of offer for families to do, so they don't feel like they're burning expensive wood or in their casket. Now, even though we don't have a natural burial cemetery here in Palmerston North, you can still go the way of an eco burial, just with the casket, no embalming and those sort of things. So you can do it. That's the closest thing if you still want to be buried at Calvin Grove, and try and be as eco as much as what you're natural as what you can. So it avoids having the chemicals and with the ones that aren't embalmed. So we've got the cooler refrigeration to hold them for that time, for 3 to 5 days or a week. So still, unembalmed, you don't still have to rush to have your funeral. So mainly with a natural burial, especially at Macra, their graves are a bit more shallower, and so it can deteriorate. The body can
decompose
a lot quicker. So by law, you've got to at least have a metre of soil coverage over your cow spittle or body and things. Yeah, so protocols, there's nothing in the law about where to scatter ashes. Like, we just advise families, if it's in a public place, just to try and be discreetly. On one of my courses I did, a funeral directing course, so someone brought up a discussion. I think the only thing that probably someone can get to it would probably be like the littering act, and to try and be, you know, discreet and not all in one area, because you'll see it all, because it's quite a big density, so it's just to try and put it over a larger area. Yeah, in a cremation plot, someone's just got a question about how many can be interred into a cremation plot. So the cemetery, it used to just be three, but I'm pretty sure you can put four lots of ashes into a cremation plot out of Kelvin Grove. If it's the niche wall, which is the wall above the ground, that only has room for two lots of ashes. Now that's all the questions that we've got here, so does anyone have any other questions or anything, or I have not, didn't quite cover any of your questions that you did ask about?
Yeah. Do you have to be in some type of coffin, even if you just go from where you die straight to the crematorium?
It probably depends on the crematorium. Like we use the council crematorium, so they, you know, require to be in a box of some sort. Like some crematoriums, you might just be able to be put on a tray or in a shroud or something, but yeah, Kelvin Grove require you to be. That's where we've got our cremation line. It's a very simple, discreet sort of a...
I was puzzled by your different prices for 50 attendees and 100 attendees.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know? You don't send out invitations, do you? So how would
you
know?
Don't. It's a hard thing to how many will be at the will come to the service. These price indications, you know, it just gives you an idea. Like if you want to cater for 40, the price is going to be, you know, catering for 10 less and things. It's a lot of people get stumped about how many is going to attend. So it's not like weddings where you send out invitations and things. So it's just sort of an educated guess. Like if some people know that they're going to have 150 at the service, not everyone will go for the refreshments after, so you can cater for probably 100, 120, depending if it's coming to lunchtime or if it's an afternoon service.
You probably
get people more at a morning service because they come to the lunchtime and things. So.
And I guess the beauty is as well with our catering lounges, you know, our ladies have always got enough cups of tea and coffee, and I've got the supermarket across the road, so if I ever fear that I'm not going to be able to feed the people, I'll buy stuff, I can bring it in. I mean, we work with a terrific range of caterers. Our main go-to is Cafe Brie on Broadway, but, you know, we work with, like, the Verdict Cafe, we work with Not Now James. We've started to introduce like the big grazing tables through the Crafted & Co. and they're, you know, great for lunchtime. Mm-hmm. it is a juggle, it is a balance, but we work with it,
Now, in your talk you were saying about sort of people come, someone's died and they come to you. How often are these things planned? Sort of wavy if someone thinks, when I die, I want this sort of funeral. And is it more important that the funeral be for that person or for the surviving people? Is it better being designed by the people who are actually burying you?
I think the key thing
You want the service to be personalised to that person.
Yeah, for what they want.
But it's for the ones that are coming to... You know, for their experience of it, but it's nice to, you know, you don't want your daughter's input, and you know the service is all about what she likes. You want it to be more towards, you know, the person that's passed away, so it's personalised towards
them. To make it personalised for us, should we be thinking about our funerals and writing the details down, or is it something we leave for other people?
Yeah, so what we've got is we've brought some brochure cakes along, and it's just good points to like note down what you think your wishes might be. It's just a good starting point, and having it handy so that when the time comes, or you can let your next of kin know, you can let your executor know, you can drop one off at the lawyers. It just gives that base between like what that loved one would want, because what people don't see is what we face when you've got families that are in dispute between what they want and what someone else wants, and then you get so many chiefs and not enough, you know, it makes it really hard.
Like, I had a funeral on Saturday, and the family didn't want bank flowers on the casket, so they just had a whole lot of interest of what this lady had to personalise the casket towards her, from an old dress that she had and different things, and looked just beautiful. They used one of our woolen caskets, so it was a lovely. We've had other funerals where someone's had a specific type of rare sports car, so they've brought that and put it in our atrium, so it's there on the day of the service to try and. It's nice to individualise the service to the person, bring it out so it's a unique sort of a service and it's not the same as another funeral. Mm-hmm.
I'd just
have
to ask one question.
Yeah.
I've been to two funerals, and it had upset me greatly where somebody from the audience got up and spoke very nasty about the person who died. Can you step in and stop it?
That's where
if it had been my family, I would have stood up and said stop.
Yes.
I was so upset.
Yeah.
They were young people.
Yeah.
They were young people, and there was no need to go over past history. Yeah. Mm.
Well, that's where it's good for the celebrant, not
the
front of course. It's good for them to be able to come in. And depending what it is, we can always come and say it's not the time and place. And
it's happening.
And that's where families have the options to open up tributes. Where if you do open up tributes for everyone, that's where it could lead to someone like that to do it.
Yeah, to worry. Some people
get
pre-recorded
speeches.
That's
where it's...
It was great. Yeah, no,
that's
that is. Yeah.
I
won't
say it
without
you. Okay.
I don't
get a chance to say a word.
Do people tend to prepare the, now there seems to be either videos or slideshow things for people. Is that often done way in advance, or just after someone's died, they just pull them?
Maybe after someone's died. Some have probably prepared one before. Most of the times we do it on behalf of the family, but that's just up to what the family. Sometimes it's nice if they've got someone in the family that can do the visual. It's nice for them to feel a part of contributing, putting something towards the service, putting that together. So we're just there to help, which is most of the time with those sort of things, and because sometimes it's a time factor as well. Find the photos, put the music, they don't have the technology to put it together, but say we just need to help where we're needed. And so if families put it together, we just like to have it a day before so we can, if it's service in our chapel, we can try it. Because last thing you want to do is get it 10 minutes before the service and it doesn't work, and like all that effort they've put into it. So we're trying, like it should work, but it's Murphy's Law, if you don't try it, it'll go wrong.
And in your role, is there any sort of follow-up on families sometime after a funeral commemoration service?
Yes, there is, and there are services that are available for people if they need extra help. We are in the next year, we've just started to work with the Grief Centre, so we're going to be introducing that kind of follow-up, that service. It's not going to be provided to everyone, but to the ones that we really feel, because it's a cost to our business. So we will, we're looking forward to that. Yeah, but definitely providing resources and stuff like that that are available, or pointing people into the right direction. I think that, the most important thing for people to, and I could bet you've all lost someone in this audience, right? I mean, it's, or if you've lost someone close, and at that time in a funeral, and you can have people around you, and all of a sudden when that funeral is over, just how lonely it can actually feel. So if you know someone that's gone through a loss, it is just reaching out in another like week or 2 weeks, you know, pick up the phone. I think in our generation, or younger ones, I think that fear of, you know, we've got social media and it's easy for people to go, oh, sorry for your loss, thinking about you, and we hit send. But it's not the same, is it? When we actually need to pick up the phone more. We need to go visit people and see people face to face to reach out. And I think that can probably, you know, make people feel more comfortable than a proper, you know, like a service that provides like that counselling side of things. But yeah, we definitely, our team build really close relationships with families, and it's really important to us. You know, we become an extension of their family, and just like you're saying with the speeches and stuff, you know, our team, you know, if there was things that were going on, we'll do everything we can to mitigate, to give respect to that loved one.
Respect, yes.
Yeah.
I have 2 artificial body parts. Is there any issue with that in terms of my burial or my cremation?
For burial, it wouldn't matter. Cremation, it's depending if they've got batteries. So that's we get ones with artificial hips and things like that, and they still get cremated with those, and then that probably just gets disposed of later on after the cremation.
Yeah.
That's the main thing, is that can't be cremated as pacemaker or anything with batteries.
What about
Yeah. So they've got batteries and
they've got made nuts and things. I don't. There must be stuff that's inside the head as well as outside.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know.
Something to look into. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you've got a long time yet.
You know, and the doctor would have that kind of information on file as well. So, you know, if there was anything there, like that's why on those medical certificates that things get signed off, is the doctor is basically declaring, has this person got a pacemaker, or have they got other, you know, things that would be, to look at. And, you know, we do get from time to time, you know, medical practitioners that will come in and remove things. So, yeah, we won't. You're looked after.
Okay, just one question, then I'll jump to you.
Taken out.
Yeah. Just is there something of a shift towards commemoration or memorial services rather than funerals, or it's still fairly say that most people just have a funeral?
Still, funeral is the most. Is the most. Not that many memorials. There's a lot. The direct cremation side is really coming in, that families just don't want to do anything. It's, as I say, they're probably just following the wishes of the one that's passed away, and it can affect them. As I say, what the lady was talking on the video, you know, it affected her that she couldn't start that grieving process with a funeral. Like, the thing is, you don't have to have a... You can use a funeral director, but you can, if it's all... comes down to money, you can still just have something with the ashes that doesn't involve the funeral at a later stage, but at least that's some sort of ceremony that you're doing to help you start that journey and the grieving process, which is very important.
Yeah, you're right. COVID was definitely like the change of that drive between, you know, direct cremation and the memorial service, because we had family members and friends that were overseas that couldn't come into the country. So, you know, cremation does buy that little bit more time for families, which did, that definitely increased our direct cremation, as Hayden was saying, where there's just a cremation and then families might choose to do something down the track. Yeah. But,
What's the procedure if the deceased is an organ donor? When does the organs get harvested and where?
Well, that's where it would probably be, if someone's passing away in hospital, they'll probably, you know, when it's coming to their time, they'll know those situations before with, like, we've probably had a few eye donors, so that's sort of been you know, by the time it comes into our queue, we know that there's someone coming flying down from Auckland to come and do it, and then they fly back straight away. So, maybe it's just through the hospital. We're just there to, if it's done on our site, depending where the person can get down to do the, take the organ, or like if it's a heart or different things like that, they'd have to be on life support.
Could you comment on live streaming?
Yes. Well, before COVID, live streaming was, it was sort of a big part, but now since COVID, it's become, every service is just about live streamed. From our chapel, we've got live streaming set up, so it's just an easy thing to set up and to provide the link out to people to watch it. When you go to churches and different venues, it's just double checking if, like, some churches have that technology to do it, which is brilliant. Otherwise, we've just got to get someone from outside to come in and set up and do it, which can be a bit more costly for the family to have that live stream.
And the benefit as well of the funeral live stream is that video stays on our site for 3 months. So people don't have to watch it as the funeral's taking place if they are overseas and there is a time difference, or maybe they're just not ready at that time to watch it, or perhaps they attended the funeral but they'd like to watch the funeral live stream afterwards, then it's available. But as Hayden says, it depends on what provider has been used. We have our own cameras set up in here, just as you've got in here, so or are there lights?
And the main tube still have it set up on these.
Yeah.
Is there a system for avoiding the scheduling, double scheduling of funerals, you know, between funeral directors, so you don't?
No, it's not, I suppose. No.
Yeah.
So I suppose you've had time to, you had someone let you know at the same time to, yeah. No, there's not, no.
Something to think about.
Without disclosing personal circumstances or whatever, do things come to mind and say, what about catastrophic service, things that went all wrong that could have been planned in a, do any stand out for you like that?
At a funeral or something? We haven't had anything to go wrong, you know, maybe you might have something with the music or something like that. So, you know, the main thing would probably be more like it's a piece of music and that, but you know, we haven't had that happen. And, you know, it doesn't say it could, because technology is good, but sometimes it can be, you know, nerve, especially if we haven't set it up and the family have given it to you, and you haven't had time to get all the processes, you know, they've got a lot of changes and different things. And I've heard of other places where, I suppose, graves have collapsed at a burial and things like that, and so when they get out there, the sides have collapsed. You know, you hear of different things, but I just hope it doesn't happen to us. So.
Okay, now, just one last question, and I'll hand over to Chris and myself. Sorry. Okay, now there's so many cases of broken families, people being estranged, so on and so forth. Are there issues with all that? Are people excluded from funerals because of family conflicts, or are there ways of handling those?
Yeah, that's where probably families will probably more have a private service and they might not tell that side of the family. And, you know, it is we sort of get stuck in the middle, but as I say, it's between them. So we've had some that say, well, this one might come along and cause a bit of trouble, but no, I suppose 99.99 times out of 100, you know, people were on their behaviour when it comes to the actual day of the service.
She said you don't have to
pop up.
Just
going
to ask, what's the procedure if you die overseas?
Yeah, well, I suppose if you die overseas, it's where, I suppose, a funeral director needs to be engaged overseas, and they'll do the documentation and the usual repatriation to come back to New Zealand, and when it gets here, you know, so we've got a transport down to Wellington because the caskets don't fly into Palmerston North.
So you could choose to be cremated overseas and have your ashes brought back?
Yeah, well, that would be the easiest, because ashes can come back on someone's hand luggage, so that's no extra charge. Where transporting in a casket or even posting of ashes is very expensive these.
Yeah, a friend of mine used to work as a consulate in Rome, and part of her job was dispatching people who died in Rome. you mentioned lead line casting.
I suppose each country probably has different requirements of what is mainly, as long as it's, you know, sealed and different things, and you know, we've had to come from overseas with a zinc liner type thing, and you've got to try and chip away to open it up and different things. And
yeah, we definitely recommend, you know, if you have got, you know, ashes to be transported, you know, if it is via a flight, to, you know, I was trying to, you know, that it travels with somebody rather than, you know, using the courier or post system.
But you can't replace ashes if they're lost in transit.
And it has to be declared for the agricultural people.
Yeah, we've got ashes going, if we've looked after a family, they've got ashes going overseas, we've just got documentation to it, we get them to carry with it, so when it comes to customs, you know, last thing you want to do is you can't get the ashes into the country that you're going to, so the more paperwork you've got about the ashes, like just a copy of the death certificate, we get one from the cemetery where the cremation's taking place, so they've got the cremation sort of letter. I mean, we just do a couple of forms ourselves, so the more paperwork, and we haven't had anyone come back to say they couldn't get, you know, their loved one back into a country.
I want to say something that was left out. When we saw the staff, there was a little dog named Lola.
Yes.
Now, she wasn't around at the funeral of my wife, but I guess a lot of people have their own dogs at home or in the rest home or wherever they have dogs brought in for them. So, yes, that's another service that no other company provides, I would think.
Yes, yeah. No, Lola's our little special edition. So she's our family dog.
Yeah.
And
when I went to a funeral, she was at home with the children because we're school holidays.
Oh, yes.
But I want to apologise to you. Now that I've met you, because when my wife died in 2014, she chose Christmas Eve to pass on. And in no time, I don't know who ordered cottons, whether it was the hospice or what, but it was 9 or 9:30 and Hayden turned up with the trolley. That was Christmas Eve. Well, that was sad for all of us, but that's the kind of service they give. And I get a calendar every year.
Oh, good, because I'm getting new ones done. Yeah, everybody. Yeah, write your name down.
Oh, Lola.
I don't know whether you want everybody to know you can get calendars. But it's in my bedroom window with Lola on it every month. And that's so my children know where to go if I die in my bed. Here it is. But you used to give beautiful ones with New Zealand scenery.
Oh, yes.
Well, I tore all those off and put them on the floor for years.
Mm-hmm.
And now I put them up and pin them below Lola so that I can have the best of two worlds.
Yes. Okay. I think that's it for the afternoon. We've got the packs there for people to take, and I'll hand over to our chair, Chris, to wrap up the...
I was impressed at how professional and commercial free this was until the last moment. Kylie and Hayden, thank you very much. This has really been most informative, and it's good to know that we may not have any choice about dying, but there's an awful lot of choice about the things that go with it and how we go and where we end up and so on. We have a little a token here, a little book about the U3A and a voucher in there. So just to say thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, everyone, that there's that this is being recorded, and you can revisit the presentation on the U3A Manawatū site, as indeed is the case for all the other presentations in this series. Our next session, a little bit of choice does come back in, actually. Assisted dying services in New Zealand. So that'll be at the same time and same place next week. Dr. Annette Forrest, who's an intensivist, a critical care doctor at North Shore Hospital and Waikato Hospital. She's going to talk to us about assisted dying.
But meanwhile, can we thank our speakers very much for this wonderful presentation?